Welcome to the Kawartha Small Business Podcast, where we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small businesses. So we created a podcast where we have million-dollar conversations that help small business owners thrive. I'm Brian Rump from Profit Coach.
And I'm Matt Garrity of Managee Digital.
And we are recording from the Thrive Podcast Studio at Thrive Coworking Community in downtown Lindsay, Ontario at 18 Kent Street West. And today we have with us Roderick Benz, who is the owner of The Advocate. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Brian. It's nice to be here. Good to see you, Matt.
Yeah, tell us about yourself and also The Advocate.
Well, I'm the publisher of The Lindsay Advocate. I started it 5 years ago in 2017, just online at first, in the late summer. We quickly realized we had something here that was worth expanding. And so we quickly went to a print edition, a glossy print magazine in March of 2018, and have never looked back. It's been a monthly glossy magazine since then. You might call it a local Maclean's with news and features and an emphasis on social and economic wellness for our community.
Why do you call it a magazine and not a newspaper?
Because it's a magazine. It's the size of a magazine. It's glossy paper, not the annoying newsprint that is left on your fingertips. It is a professionally produced magazine for all intents and purposes.
I think I want to ask a question about what makes you so crazy to sort of get into the magazine business. And even you say like a local Maclean's, I'm like, I think you mean Maclean's 20 years ago, because so many magazines, you know, downsized, they've changed their paper. And then, you know, here you come with this great new sort of almost throwback, and, you know, you do have something here. So that's just kind of awesome to see, but tell us about what that feels like to be kind of going against the trends.
Yeah, well, actually, Brian, I actually do mean like a local Maclean's, because Maclean's now is a monthly print magazine.
Oh, okay.
It used to be weekly.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I used to get it weekly, and then it kind of changed.
It
and
did.
And then I stopped, so I actually have been following.
Well, they've actually had a renaissance since then. It's very creatively produced now. It's a print product once a month.
Oh, wow.
Of course, it has online news as well. But as for going against the grain, you're not wrong that print has been in decline. But what kind of print? It's the newspapers that are folding and merging, becoming online only, becoming scarce as a print product. But there is a market even for millennials. It's not just older people reading print. If it's in a nice and glossy format that's easy on the eyes, that has something to say, that isn't just filled with houses and pretty cars and nice gardens, you have to have a point of view. There's so many magazines that come and go, or they limp along and trick some advertisers, I would say, being inside because it looks pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have nothing to say, you're not going to command the loyalty of your audience. So that's the simple secret to The Advocate's success. We're all living right here in our community. We're ingrained in community issues. We have something to say. We have something to tell all the great people who live here. And that's been our success.
Yeah, I think that's really the beauty of it, is having something to say. And you're not really a sort of provocateur with something to say. Like, I think you have an angle, so it's interesting. Like, I find myself always picking it up. Like, I can't think of another publication or magazine that I sort of regularly pick up when I'm out and about, which I think is something really
fantastic, neat.
And you know, I do think too, like, you know, there's always a need for local news. It's just how people get it maybe have changed. So it's just really great that you spotted that opportunity and sort of worked away at it to get it to where it is now.
Yes, we feel really good about that. I find our online audience is, there is some overlap, but there is also a clear demarcation between some of that audience and some of our print audience as well, where until we post our print content online, and that's another difference with us, we're print first. Mm-hmm. So when you pick up a copy of The Advocate, it doesn't feel like, I think I read this somewhere online last week.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that until you said that, but it makes
Right. We respect our print audience that way by allowing each print edition of The Advocate to be a little event in itself to pick up, enjoy, and then we slowly release the online content, about 80% of it, throughout the month.
Yeah, that's really, I like that just from a business standpoint, sort of picking a strategy like that and going with it versus trying to be sort of all things to everyone or adapting or like, you know, I'm sure you hear it all the time. Well, you should do this. You should do that. Or, you know,
for sure.
I hear this is good, but you can't possibly do all of those things and be the size of operation you are. So you have to, you know, have a point of view, pick what you want to sort of talk about and go at it one sort of print edition at a time. I think that's really neat.
Yeah.
Who decides what to do, what you're writing about? Like, are you going to the writers and asking them, like, hey, I hear this is happening, or are they coming to you with ideas? Like, how does all that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for too long, early on, it was sort of just in the publishers, i.e. me, purview to do that and decide mm-hmm. everything, and that's hard when you're living in an echo chamber.
Sure.
So recently... a new editor-at-large and business development person has come on board to help me, Rebecca McCracken.
Oh.
And so she and I just recently actually called all our writers together.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the kind of meeting that you're talking about. And we just take in those ideas and feedback. And it's amazing. There's so much synergy when you get, 10, 12 people together, all with their own specialties, like Ginny Colling for the environment, or Ian McKechnie for local history.
Yeah.
Other strong writers like Nancy Payne and Jeff Coleman up in Fenland Falls. We have a great cadre of people who come to the table with their own strengths, and we hash it out at that point, and we push back on each other, and then at the end of the day, then myself and Rebecca will decide what we have room to work with.
Is it like in the movies where like these writers are writing articles and then they bring them to you and you're like, no, this is trash. This isn't making print. Does that happen a lot?
No, you know what? rarely. Never that I would say it's trash.
Right.
But sometimes they're out of time necessity with simply a once a month print schedule. It happened this morning, actually, where Kirk Winter filed an editorial that I thought was extremely strong. So strong that I wanted to save it for print because we're print first.
Mm.
But the timeline based on what he was writing about is about an event that's happening in the next week and a half. So we're going to go online only with that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it will never see print because we need the immediacy of online. So we have to have that the give and take between print and online.
So, and I'm all over the place with these questions. I'm sorry. Business wise, the writers, are they contractors that you pay, or are any of them full time and like on a salary? How does all that work?
Everybody's in terms of our writers is working on a per story basis.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. And like, you're constantly looking for new writers, or how does that work? Like, is there like, what's the vetting process for that?
The vetting process is easy. Send me an article that you think is worthy, and I'll be able to tell right away whether or not they can write. Or if they show promise, or if it's a home run right away. So, yeah, the vetting process is simply send it to me on spec if I hear that a new person has a writing idea. But we're not looking constantly for new writers. We have a pretty strong mm-hmm. group as it is. But I'm always have one ear open, of course, and I'm ready to hear about that. But like anywhere else, it's hard to find new people. So we're grateful for those. But who are already with The Advocate.
Sure. Why did you start this? Like Brian said, it kind of sounds crazy to start, right?
Yeah. The germ was planted when the Lindsay Post closed 10 years ago this year.
What was the Lindsay Post? Was it like the
The Lindsay Post, that's right, because you're fairly new to the community.
Yeah.
It was the daily newspaper of record.
Oh.
For 100 and, I'm not sure if I have this number, more than 130 years.
So it was like a daily newspaper.
It was the Lindsay Daily Post.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I forget at what point it moved to
twice a week.
Twice a week, and then once a week, like Ortho Lakes this week, until it finally folded. And it went through a number of owners and so on. But there was that journalistic history attached to the Post that no other paper or media outlet had. So when it folded 10 years ago, as you know, I started The Advocate 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So for a few years, that was in the back of my mind as I did other things. One of the things I was doing at the time was researching and writing a lot about basic income policy.
Mm-hmm.
So when Kathleen Wynne, the premier at the time, announced that my old hometown would be one of three sites in Ontario to have a basic income pilot, I took that as like the biggest sign of all that I needed to get back here from a social policy angle to write about and quite frankly support the idea of basic income. And that's how The Advocate was born, was that idea of advocacy on that issue, as well as social policies writ large, that we should be creating a publication that supported good social wellness in this community, in my old hometown. And I've been looking for an opportunity for years to come back here, and I wasn't sure how to monetize my my return, what I was qualified to do here. And the idea of The Advocate fortunately took root based on that advocacy for basic income.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's been, for me, I've enjoyed watching sort of the progression of that from sort of you, your publication, to it growing, but still keeping that sort of base underlying message where, you know, when you pick up The Advocate, you know, I think of other publications over the past where sometimes, you know, you pick something up and you know you're going to get angry a little bit, but you kind of have to watch, or you feel like, oh, I got to see what the crazies are talking about, or like, where's this coming from? But, you know, for, you know, the most part, The Advocate is, you know, it's very positive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, social progression, building the community, which I think is another thing that's maybe against the grain as well, because sometimes that's a harder thing to sell than if you just showed up sort of blasting stuff that everyone just wanted to sort of pick up and read.
We have our blasting moments. There are some issues we feel strongly about, and we're back to having something to say, and we will speak out in editorials about that. We're doing that now. At the time we're recording this podcast, the Minden ER is about to close. We're talking about that quite heavily, and believe that there are reasons for that that fall in the provincial government's lap.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not afraid to talk about that during this issue. But for the most part, yeah, we try to be positive community builders without being that media outlet that is immediately targeted as, oh, they're conservative, oh, they're liberal.
Yeah.
Oh, they're socialist. There are some people who believe we're the most leftist publication. Call us Pravda Light and so on. And then there are others who think we're too conservative. So it's interesting.
What?
Yes.
I think it's wild. It's kind of fun to talk about, because there are times where, you know, I think early on, whenever I read something, I would kind of know what to expect. And now it's like, I'm just thinking about times things have made me think where I'm like, well, this isn't as, you know, maybe left as I want it to be. Or sometimes I'm like, well, this is too, you know, conservative. And, you know, but there's times where I'm like, oh, I got to go write a letter to the editor. But then I'm like, no, because you'll print it. And I don't know.
That's why you print it. Just write that letter, Brian, and then take a day with it. And make sure
you have it. Get my typewriter out and start smashing my keys. And, yeah, I think that's, you know, balance is something that I don't think exists, but you like find a good way to sort of balance those things and make people think in a way where you're not telling people what to think necessarily. So,
mm-hmm.
when did this become a business? Like at a certain, did when you started the digital publication,
yes,
was it like a fun hobby thing? Did you think it was going to become a business, a way to make full-time living? When did it become that business?
When it started online, there was no part of me that was in dabbler mode. I wanted this to work with every fiber of my cool. being. I wanted to be back here. I lived at the Days Inn and the Kent Inn alternately for months, 2-3 days a week from my home in Cambridge. I would come up to start the Advocate. I would reacquaint myself with my old community because it had been 20 years and re-meet people who are still here, meet new people. The Advocate was basically started at boiling over at the time and just using their Wi-Fi and interviewing people and filing stories and so on. But never did I think that this wouldn't work. Mm. I wasn't 100% sure on if it would take root, and it did. I didn't realize I'd have to become a chief salesperson as well as chief writer at the time. And that is what happened. And it's duties that I still do a lot of today is the sales. But it actually, from that first print publication in March 2018, that's when it became a business, to answer your question. Mm-hmm. We were in the black from that first publication, narrowly.
Wow.
But we stayed there since then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So it was just that half a year online, late summer of 2017, over the winter, where we were trying to figure out how does this, you know, become a business.
That's funny. Like almost every business owner I talk to, me myself, when I started my business, I'm like passionate about marketing and I'm like, okay, I got to find a way to monetize that and do my own thing. But I don't know how to be a business owner. I don't know how to do accounting and bookkeeping.
Yes.
I know how to do marketing, but like, I don't know how to do sales. I don't know how to do all those things. So right. How did you find that transition?
That was challenging. I never fancied myself as a salesperson considering I was a journalist or a writer my whole life. So, it took me not too long to realize though that sales is just relationships, right? It's just chatting with people and being genuine, being authentic. And I've found a lot of friends that way mm-hmm. to this day too, who enjoy being a part of a publication like The Advocate because they know I'm not there to, I'm not all about the money, just mm-hmm. making a sale. We're trying to help each other out here. This is a business is an ecology,
yeah,
especially in a small town.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as the ecology, I think what's great about the monthly print glossy magazine is for a certain type of business, it's just a great way to reach your market. If you have a market of people who pick that up and read it. So it's like, it is finding that partnership, what makes sense versus, you know, hassling people to sort of pony up and sort of lean on them to get money when maybe it's not the right business fit for them. But it's, you know, creating something that I think people want. People want the news and they want to look at it. And then the reality is we've created a system where you need advertisers to sort of be able to pay for that, to get that in front of
that's right
people.
Do you find you're ever having to question the advertisers that are in there? Meaning there's some that maybe come your way and you don't think that they're appropriate for the magazine. You don't want them in the magazine. Does that happen often? And give me their names.
It has not happened often. The only one that springs to mind is cannabis and then vape stores. We've been approached a couple of times. We're not a big enough organization for me to pour through all the laws related to that and how it can be sold. So I just politely declined the advertising at that point. This was a couple of years ago too. And honestly, I don't think the government had finished regulating.
Yeah, I know it was really complicated. People weren't quite sure what they could do, what they couldn't do, what you can say. So yeah, that's an interesting perspective because you know, you at the end of the day are the publisher who makes the choice of what goes out. So you have to be accountable.
Right. You used to see a lot more cannabis ads online. I don't see them at all anymore. I think like you said, people probably put them up and then the government figured it out afterwards. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
Now you're hearing, like even the other day, I read an article about the legal gambling, sports gambling in Ontario. And there's athletes that are in some of those promotions. And should those athletes be in those ads? And then there's advocacy groups coming out saying, like, we shouldn't even be advertising sports gambling. And it's just, I kind of know where I stand with all this. Like, it's, if it's legal, it's legal. Let's do it type of thing. But it's fascinating that I still think from maybe this is my progressive mind and not conservative. I'm fascinated that we're having this conversation about like sports gambling or cannabis. Like, if it's legal, let's do it. Let's go.
Sounds like a new podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Max, free market podcast.
Free market podcast.
Except for conservatives who don't only want the free market for certain things.
Yes.
That are picked and chosen. So that's maybe as political. I'll get before I get on my my fun, tiny rants. So.
Yes.
Cool. What's been your favorite story over the past 5 years? Is there an issue or something that you're particularly proud of?
I think the one that jumps out, I think was in our first year of publication when Lindsay's Ross Memorial Hospital was considering, well, it wasn't all up to them, but there was talk afoot about Peterborough Regional Health Center and Lindsay's Hospital merging. And that would have been the death knell for RMH, in our opinion, at The Advocate. We went hard on that issue as our front cover. We held rallies at Ross Memorial Hospital. We spawned from this issue and from our advocacy, the Kawartha Lakes Health Coalition. I'm not sure I have that acronym quite right.
The one where they recruit people locally?
No. It's an advocacy group that basically was trying to keep less private interests out of healthcare. Mm. But the bottom line is we went hard on that issue. That's another example of the line that we're willing to draw with The Advocate can get a bit blurry sometimes. If we feel strongly enough about an issue, you might see us on a picket line.
Mm-hmm.
That's not standard media.
Sure.
That's bordering on advocacy media. So we're very proud that that decision was halted, we hope, for good. I mean, this community is growing. It would have made no sense to us for that hospital to have been downgraded in any way.
Is complete balance in news media important?
No. Not all the time. I should have brought a copy of the magazine here with me, but we have a quote on the contents page that basically speaks to this. The idea of complete impartiality in news, in my mind, is just not possible. That doesn't mean you don't strive for fairness.
Yeah.
But everybody comes in, every person, every organization comes in with a point of view. And as long as you're upfront about that point of view, then that's okay. That's okay to me anyway. And many other organizations.
Yeah, and I think, like, for me as a reader and consumer of a lot of news, I check out quickly when I can tell people aren't disclosing those point of views or they're not themselves. You know, my biggest thing is, you know, I teach economics at Fleming College, and, you know, you'll see economists on TV, you know, they label themselves economists, but most of them are, you know, paid by a political party to go out and hustle talking points. And they rarely disclose those types of things. They might not be even that educated in, you know, economics. And, you know, it's one thing if it's like, hey, here's my background, here's who's paying me, here's what I study, here's this thing I'm advocating for, you know, then you can listen and take it seriously. But if they're sort of quietly just out hustling talking points they've been given, like, I just find that so frustrating, and it's not really news. I'd rather read something from somebody I disagree with where their background and point of view is disclosed so you can actually engage in sort of a dialogue.
Right. Right. It gets tricky, too, when you look at the national media. I mean, I can scroll through my phone, Google News headlines, and spot a National Post headline a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
But I can for the Star, too.
Sure.
You didn't ask, but my publication of choice is the Globe and Mail, because I find, as far as national news, I find it great in terms of trying to seek some balance, but then from an editorial perspective, they'll come out and say what they're for or against as well. So
yeah, which is neat. I play a little game with Sun News headlines where I try to guess what it's actually about. It's always like, here's this big, like, blow up headline that's about something, and then they kind of allude to it, and then they talk about something completely different, and then they loop back to like something else, and it never really like even addresses what the headline is or gets into any meat of anything, and then it just kind of ends, and people, I guess, are supposed to be mad about that. So,
an opinion piece, I assume.
No, these are like some aren't even opinion pieces. These are like quote unquote news articles. I try actually not even to read their opinion pieces, but it's usually something else. So that's a little game I play where I try to guess what it's really about and then see if I'm right.
Why do people think that the news has to be balanced then? Is this an old-timey thought?
It is an old-timey thought. It's an enduring thought, too. Mm-hmm. They're not wrong in thinking that there should be some striving for fairness. So I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying...
Yeah. That I'm not trying to get you in trouble, by the way.
I'm not saying that any news publication should be striving not to be fair. That's different than completely unbiased.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the issue, too. An idea is not forthcoming yet in terms of, as an example, but most issues are nuanced enough that you can also have more than one writer tackle it. Mm-hmm. You might even do a he said, she said thing in the magazine or online so people can see the issues that way. It just depends on the issue in terms of how it can best be expressed for the reader.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things I wish I learned when I was younger is all of this stuff. We kind of have, the newspaper would show up. I grew up in Belleville, so it was the Belleville Intelligencer. most of my friends had paper routes. I never had my own, but I'd help them, deliver it. So you get that, but I never... and I never would pay attention to authors either of like, who is it that's saying this thing and, what's their, background or the difference between, a straight up reporting versus journalism versus opinion piece. Like, I am embarrassed to even know when I actually, it clicked and I discovered sort of the difference between those things. So you can kind of wonder what you're getting into and why.
I think that's normal, Brian, for everybody. It's just a slow process that you realize as when you're a young man, you're realizing that, analysis is different than opinion, mm-hmm. which is different than just seeing a byline. So it's just a news story. My June column in last month's Advocate starts out me talking about remembering being a paper boy and how I delivered the Examiner here in Lindsay, where I grew up, and I'd often encounter the Lindsay Post newspaper boy as well. But we were that last.
Did you fight?
We did not fight. We did not fight. And papers, most people subscribed to more than one paper at that time, right? We were there was no internet. We were the last, we're talking early 80s. So, in that trusted newspaper cycle, news gathering cycle, we were the last line. We were the final cog in the machine. We were information movers and givers right at that last final step to get it into people's hands. And we were trusted. The news was trusted then,
mm-hmm.
unlike today, which is another issue.
Yeah, I think that's a whole other podcast maybe what people trust and don't trust. What do you think's an interesting issue going on or perhaps as you advocate and see the community grow, what is maybe something you're excited about or maybe a sort of positive trending issue for the community to sort of think about and advocate around?
Well, actually, Brian, I think you just named it in your question. It's the fact that we're growing.
Mm-hmm.
So that that massive growth and development that we're going to see is the issue of our day. It's the issue that we should all be writing about, thinking about, unpacking in different ways. It's why we released a relocation guide this year we can't stop the people from coming here. So
I'm glad you said that, because there's people that think that they can.
Right. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be growing smartly. And yeah, they have every right to be concerned about how rapidly we are growing and in what ways. And that is the conversation we need to have. Yeah. More than once and in many different angles. That's the defining issue for the next few years in our community.
Do you think, it's funny because I've been in the community for almost 20 years now, from Belleville, and moved up here and was in banking. And it was like, you know, Walmart's going to be here by Christmas. It was like the first year I was here. And yeah, we've heard that, you know, forever. And
so bored with that conversation.
Yeah. Well, I did a little article that I don't know if I published really, but like, it's not going to happen, I think, from Walmart's standpoint, not anyone else's. But the growth, it seems like everyone's been like, oh, we're going to grow. And then it hasn't been dramatic. So then I wonder if it's been an intentional decision to sort of resist the dramatic growth that we've maybe seen in some other small communities where, you know, you drive through, you know, 1 year and then 2 years later, all the fields you went past are all houses. Like, I don't know that I see that level of growth here, but I'm open to being surprised by it. But just, I guess, how fast will we grow? And is there any intention around it, or is it just going to happen?
I think we're looking at adding, here in Lindsay, I think we're looking at adding another 10,000 people by 2030. It's extraordinary growth.
Yeah.
You're right, it hasn't happened before, and I think there was some optimism, some over-optimism on the part of people who were in the pro-growth camp that it would happen that fast. But there's been a confluence of events since then, right, including a pandemic that has made people realize they can work from anywhere, that there's going to be empty office buildings in Toronto for a long time. But they're going to be, I think it's 47% full right now in terms of people who've gone back to work full time. That was a recent Globe and Mail story. Toronto is one of the most vacant big cities in North America right now because people here are pushing to work from home. They're looking for other options, including coming up to a place like Lindsay and Cortha Lakes,
where you can go to a Thrive co-working community and rent an office for a day while you're here if you don't feel like being.
I wasn't going to say, I thought Roderick was going down that route to the floor.
I thought I was sufficiently vague to let the reader, the listener, come up with that. So yeah, big growth is coming. It's not overly optimistic anymore. So we better have our cards in order to make it happen in a way that benefits everyone. And we know the housing is practically in crisis mode everywhere, and no less than here.
I guess my biggest concerns as a citizen, that sounds weird to say, I think about amenities and services for my kids so they can keep being kids, go do sports, all that kind of fun stuff. And then I don't know if this is a bit off the board, but there's not enough grocery stores up here.
Yeah.
I was saying to my wife the other day, we went to the Big Empire for years and it got too expensive. But we'd always see our neighbors. And then we went to Food Basics. We started going to Food Basics now.
Oh, so the other one that the Big Empire owns.
But yeah. It's
a different name.
But somehow like doesn't get lumped in with Loblaws. Everyone hates Loblaws. Nobody says anything about the Food Basics and the Metros. And anyways,
yeah.
I was just thinking yesterday how like we used to go to Loblaws, you'd see everybody there. It was packed. Now at Food Basics yesterday, packed and saw a half dozen people that we knew because everyone's transitioning over. But at the same time, it's so busy all the time. There's more than two grocery stores here, but there's two very large ones and then two smaller ones.
Downtown?
Downtown. Yeah. There needs to be more. There needs to be more fast. That's going to be a huge problem.
The lack of fast. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes. So I know Flatow has plans on the east side to see another large grocery store.
Right.
Go in there as well in one of its communities. I'm going to go back. This is slightly off topic, but you said it was weird to call yourself a citizen. That's another, it's a thing that bothers me. You will never see me write the word taxpayer unless it's in a quote, because I hate the way that yeah. more common term reduces us all to people who pay taxes. It's so reductive. I mean, we are citizens, so we have to get more comfortable saying and using that word and all the rights and responsibilities that implies.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because I also don't like the sort of quote unquote, well, I'm a taxpayer, because I think we are citizens, and as citizens, we can choose to direct a representative to spend money in building the communities that we want. And it should be about serving what people want, not necessarily, you know, cutting everything or putting money into all different things.
It's not always the bottom line, is it?
It is about, you know, having policies that allow for that growth. Or, like, you know, you're like, we need more grocery stores. Well, in theory, the free market will supply us a grocery store, should that become needed, right? So, but you have to have the policies in place so that someone can reasonably buy and create that grocery store.
It's true. The free market could use a little bit of tweaking as well, because it's not actually free.
Oh, yeah.
That's another
podcast. That
we've identified four extra
I know. I know Ryle long enough to know that he not actually mean free market.
I know.
Just for the general company.
We have a podcast episode that we did about that. So, which I think is cool. Like, to sort of see that growth, that positivity.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see that. I think this community, maybe when I first moved here, that's maybe the same as some or different, but there was a big focus on, like, the past.
Yes.
Right? It was like, let's roll back to, you know, how things were in the 60s.
Yes.
Everything was just so awesome in the 60s. We should just keep it exactly like that and never change anything.
Right.
Ever.
Well,
versus, you know, really, you know, focusing on that bright future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this city has a small C conservative streak, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever you find small C conservatism in dominance, you're going to find an attitude that is more nostalgic and status quo than it is wanting change and wanting growth. So I think politicians here have to grapple with that, too, in terms of supporting what their constituents want and yet having enough foresight to lead as well, and inevitably leadership means change in some cases, in a lot of cases.
Do you think this is a sort of a kind of political landscape? I always find Kawartha Lakes to me so fascinating, because kind of no matter what, the conservatives win representation and it doesn't ever seem close, but yet some of the most left-leaning smartest left-leaning, accepting, you know, social left people I've ever met are in this community as well. So it's kind of like a tale of two cities of, like, you know, I think of, you know, Jenny Byrne, who was the communication strategist for conservatives, would talk about, you know, we want policies that reflect what's going on in the Fenland Falls Tim Hortons, because that's where her dad hangs out. And then I think of that Tim Hortons and I think, well, the table I used to go sit at sometimes was like the most left people ever. And then right across.
Jenny wasn't looking around. She was just at her own table.
At her own table. And I just find that just such a neat microcosm. And I'm not even that far in. So I'm wondering, sort of, do you have similar observations, or is this unique to this community, or?
I guess I don't know if it's unique. It is an accurate observation from my standpoint too. And maybe that just simply happens when you have such an entrenchment of one party that's dominant, like the conservatives here, and the inevitability of growth that's happening, like we talked about, which is going to come from a more urban environment. People with more urban mindsets tend to be more progressive. We're generalizing here.
Yeah.
And I don't mean progressive in a way that impugns the people who are here. I just mean they come with a mindset that is change-oriented, that is more small-L liberal in their thinking, and inevitably it's going to create the dynamic that you're talking about, where you have this dichotomy of sorts operating, and it'll be interesting to see how this writing looks in 50 years.
Yeah, and I think the deep thing to tie that together, when you hear about the sort of the division, is that I find everyone gets along. So some communities you'll hear of, like, you know, there's the line in the town, and this side's, you know, maybe this is more American, right? There's like the Republican side and the Democrat side, and they just fight and argue all the time. Whereas I find here, you don't see that maybe as publicly.
No.
Which I just, again, another interesting observation in terms of, you know, seeing sort of that constant change and what the growth will.
In the June issue of The Advocate, some of your listeners may have read my lunch with Tim Wiseman in Fenland Falls. And in that conversation, Tim spoke about the polarization that's happening in politics and how he's dismayed by the fact that nationally we can't seem to have conversations that aren't us and them, that aren't so polarized and so hurtful, I think, to both sides, that there's that much lack of understanding and lack of willingness to hear another's viewpoint, which wasn't the case back just 10 years ago, it seems like. Social media has really amplified division, unfortunately.
Do you think that has to do with sort of the big news corps scrambling for sort of viewers and existence? So, like, things on the extremes is what gets the attention that they need? Or is it just people are overwhelmed with stuff that we see that we're only going to sort of, you know, read and pay attention to something if it's on the extreme, versus, you know, people like me who like the nuance and I'm willing to invest some time to dig into it? I don't know if that's...
Well, I think it's the unfortunate same thing that has plagued Canada from the beginning, and that's that we live near the United States.
Yeah.
And that's a blessing and a curse. And in this matter that we're talking about, it's a big curse, because the U.S. amplifies everything that is good and bad in the world. Yeah. And unfortunately, Canada takes, there's a cultural imperialism that happens in this country with regard to the U.S. that we just import everything from the U.S., especially in this age of social media. And we just spew out a slightly lighter version of whatever is going on down there. So that's what I blame first and foremost, is that proximity to the U.S.
That's a whole other podcast as well. I always joke, people, you know, they'll say, well, I'm Canadian and I don't want to be American, but give me my Bud Light and my, you know, my constitutional amendment rights and all these things that they don't understand, you know, where they really just want to be American.
Right.
But not want to be American. It's an interesting thing that happens.
Yeah. You, maybe as I wrap this up, somewhat fitting question, where do you see The Advocate in 5 to 10 years? What's it doing? What's it added? What does it look like?
Well, I hope The Advocate continues to thrive. And I hope we're continuing to be fresh and relevant and willing to get involved in the community. I don't ever want us to become a habit. I want us to become deeply ingrained in the community, where we're always looking for the fresh. We're always willing to explore the new. The Advocate won't be alone either, I hope. We released our second publication ever, which was a one-time, at least once a year, relocation guide, which I referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at other things. Rebecca and I are planning on releasing a magazine in the fall called Social, Kortha Lakes Social. So that will be a little bit lighter, a little bit more emphasis on the people who make up our community.
Will it just be straight up hot goss all the time?
Just BuzzFeed clickbait.
It's clickbait in print. No, it's going to be a little more dignified than that. We hope it'll be a fun read for people, and we're also looking at a business publication, perhaps The Business Advocate.
That's interesting too.
So these won't be monthly. These will be couple times a year, maybe several times a year, but we're looking toward, you know, having a growth mindset for The Advocate and its perhaps sister publications.
Super. Now my mind is racing. I should have asked this question at the beginning.
Yeah, we have a podcast. We're going to have to do like a whole series.
We'll have you back for the next relocation guide, the social, the business one. Yeah.
Excellent. That's exciting. All right. Where, you know, as we sum up, what's one thing you want people to know, and then how do they find you and The Advocate?
They can find us at so many locations across Lindsay and Coeur at the Lakes, and or at lindsayadvocate.ca. You can read the entire print publication online if you want as well. I just want them to know that we're going to be there in their corner, I think, as a publication. We, not being corporate, being 100% local and independent and small, allows us to be responsive. And when someone calls me or writes to me and tells them how much The Advocate means to them, which literally happens at least every other day, I take heart in the fact that we're doing something right, and I really appreciate all those readers.
That's awesome. All right, Matt, one thing you want people to know about you and how they find you?
Not enough people know that your business exists. As Roderick mentioned, there's over 10,000 people moving to Lindsay in the next 10 years. So the number of people that don't know your business exists is going to grow and grow and grow. I can help you fix that by having more people find you on Google in less than 60 days. Just go to my website and book a call at mattygdigital.com.
Awesome. And I am the business coach that helps your business get money with grants, increased sales, and streamlining your business for profit. Find me at profitcoach.ca. And Matt and I like to collaborate together to help you launch, grow, or recharge your business. And we want to work with you. If you want to discuss working with us or be a guest on the podcast, send us an email to setitup@kawarthasmallbusinesspodcast.ca. And remember, we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small business.